everybody. This is the Twin Sisters, Ariane Smith
and Tiffany Hales.
And we are recording our podcast. And
we are.
Once again, doing it on Facebook Live.
Exactly. Now, we apologize. We're a little bit late tonight. I had posted earlier that we would start at 10, but I had some birthday festivities for my son tonight that took a little bit longer. And then, of course, this is only the second time we've done Facebook Live, and we're really technologically inept.
Difficulties, more than standard time. We could give you a ton of excuses.
It took us like 20 minutes just to figure out how to go live on Facebook.
Anyways, here we are. Thank you for listening to This Week in Mormons. So we're going to kind of do a special edition tonight, different than what we usually do. We're not going to hit a ton of current news stories because we really wanted this to be, since it's May, and this is our May podcast, we kind of wanted it to be like a Mother's Day edition, baby edition.
Exactly.
Because I'm having my baby on Sunday.
She is. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But yes, so we will do a couple of news stories tonight, but we're mostly going to focus on baby stuff and motherhood. So hopefully we will not lose too many of our male listeners. We're not going to make it like too female centered, hopefully, because we've got some fun stuff to talk
about. Plus, this is actually like right around our 1 year anniversary of when we kind of weaseled our way into this podcast.
It is.
Because it was May last year.
And it was your birthday.
Yes. And we talked about Mother's Day gifts in church.
We did. And we talked about the good and the bad, the ugly of Mother's Day gifts in church.
Yes.
And sent all the bishops with marching instructions about this is what your women want.
We gave out some really solid advice.
Yes, we did. So if you forgot our solid advice, go back and find our May podcast from last year. Okay, well, let's talk about what's been happening in the last few weeks since we last podcasted.
Right. It's been busy.
It is so busy.
You told me never to have a baby in May.
I did.
And you were right. We're only a day or two into May, and I can already tell this was a questionable decision.
Well, you know, I always knew not to have a baby in December. I mean, I was smart enough to know not to have a baby in December. But nobody ever told me that May is like the undercover hidden December.
I was listening to a podcast last week and the guy was like, May is like this sneaky little devil that is December in disguise. You don't know it's December, but it's worse than December.
Well, and you really don't know it or understand it till your kids get into school.
Yeah.
That's the problem with May. And so, you know, by the time I finished having my babies, because I have two babies born in May, my oldest one was in school at that point in time. And then I was like, what was I thinking?
Right.
So I promptly told you, I said, don't have a May baby. But in our family, the crazy doesn't just start May 1st. The crazy starts April 25th.
Yeah. Because birthday, one of my kids, April 25th.
April 25th.
And then I have an anniversary a few days later.
Yeah, what's your anniversary? The 28th?
The 28th.
The 28th.
And then my birthday is May 4th. And now my next baby's birthday is going to be 2 days after that, which is really funny. Because when we first started getting ready to have kids, I remember telling my husband specifically, I do not want to have babies near our anniversary or near my birthday or near Mother's Day so that I don't ever, especially the anniversary, so I don't ever have like guilt for leaving town on their birthdays. Well,
That didn't work out.
There's all kinds of babies sprinkled in this season.
I know. Well,
then you got two May birthdays.
I did. I had Mark's birthday was tonight. He turned 14 and got airsoft guns. My kid's a gun nut. What can I say? So he got airsoft guns for his birthday, but then Katie has her birthday on the 16th. Mm-hmm. We've got Mother's Day. I have a child that is graduating, which means not only high school graduation, but seminary graduation.
Oh, right.
So two graduations, two different kids in two different choirs, two different choir concerts. I know you have dance recitals.
We have dance recitals, piano recitals, field trips, bazaars, carnivals at the school. I mean,
and not to mention all the end of the year projects that the teachers throw at you.
Really, we're just kind of squeezing this baby in between a very small window.
So true.
And then it's like back at it.
Poor guy. He's gonna be like, come on, get up and go.
He's gonna be dragged all over that school in the month of May. They better not have any germs to give him.
So true. So needless to say, today is the 1st of May, and I often think of May is a marathon. May is not a sprint. And so by the time we get to May 31st, we will be slowly crawling across the finish line, hopefully in somewhat state of being alive and mental sanity, hopefully somewhat intact. Yes. All right. So speaking of which, your baby this Sunday.
Yes.
Now, this is a little bit early. This is early. Explain to our viewers what's going on.
I'm going to give a little PSA to any pregnant ladies out there that might be having this condition.
Okay.
It's a minor complication. I'm due actually May 28th.
Okay.
I get to have my baby May 6th. And because it's a minor complication, woohoo!
Yeah, who does not get to the last month of pregnancy and go, gee, you're going to let me have the baby early?
Right.
I don't know if I want that.
So it is this condition called cholestasis of pregnancy, and it affects your liver. And I had it with my last baby, and it's something that only happens during pregnancy. And it affects the mother's liver, has no effect on the baby. Mom's liver is totally fine once you deliver. It's like delivering is the cure.
Oh. But so what is your liver producing?
You're like there's like bile that's being pushed into the bloodstream. Anyways, so the good news is no major issue. They do take you at 37 weeks.
But you have to tell them what the side effect is.
I'll tell you the side effect.
Because that is, that, you know, when you say good news, you got to describe the side effect.
There is an intense side effect.
Of the extra bile in your bloodstream.
The cure is they deliver your baby at 37 weeks because there is a chance from 37 weeks and beyond of the baby being stillborn. Mm. Not a huge chance, but enough that they say
they don't want to risk it.
Yeah, they don't risk it. They take you at 37 weeks, no matter what. So the one and only, pretty much one and only symptom of this is you get super itchy.
Oh yeah.
Like all over your body itchy. Like I ordered professional back scratchers from Amazon, itchy, a four
pack. Like you didn't order one, you ordered a four.
They came in a four pack and there's like one in every room. I mean, I'm like, I'm just itchy. It's disturbing.
24/7. And scratching really doesn't help.
No, scratching really doesn't help. And especially a big sign is if your palms get itchy or the soles of your feet get itchy. So pregnant ladies, if you are itchy and it's like abnormally itchy, it might be a thing. Because the first time I had it with the last baby, I didn't know it was a thing. I just hung out with it for a few weeks.
And then you casually mentioned it to your doctor.
Those weird pregnancy things. There's so many weird. Anyway, this time around, I knew right away. I was like, oh, it's coming.
Well, and it's made it seem like the end of your pregnancy. Like, I mean, you know, we've been waiting for several months. And now it's like, oh, it's here? Really?
Right. So, and the itching gets worse at night. I have to tell you what my 8-year-old said to me the other night. We were on the bed and we were just getting ready for bed and family prayer. And I was just scratching like crazy. I was so itchy. And she came up to me and I could tell she was trying to be nice. Uh-huh. And she whispered in my ear, she said, "Mom, it's really weird." She's like, "Really? It's kind of weird. I think you have a problem." And I was like, "Yes, I definitely have a problem."
Well, you know, the first step to curing is admitting you have a problem.
So
that's step number one in the 12-step program. Admit you have a problem.
So that's my story. That's my PSA. If you're pregnant and itchy, it could be a thing.
Oh, dear. That's too funny. So, all right. Well, let's hit just a couple of news stories really quick before we get into baby stuff and mother stuff. And the reason we want to hit these news stories is they're somewhat of a follow-up to other stories that we've covered, specifically last month. If you recall, in our April podcast, we talked about the MTC president in the 80s who had been engaged in inappropriate touching and behaviors with missionaries in the MTC. It was reported, but kind of swept under the rug. There wasn't a lot done about it. It was coming to light because she had kind of done a slime conversation with him where she'd recorded the conversation. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so a new one hit the news this week. Only this was a lot more recent. And in this particular story, the outcome was entirely different.
Totally handled differently.
Exactly.
Which is good. This means we're progressing.
We are progressing. So there was a gentleman and he was, of course, a lawyer. You may imagine last time I talked about lawyers behaving badly. He's an example of a lawyer behaving badly. So he was called as a mission president. I believe he was out of Alabama, somewhere in the South originally. Mm-hmm. He and his family, he's very young. He's 43. He's got two daughters, 12 and 8, and his wife, and they're called as a mission president to Puerto Rico in 2014. So he arrives in Puerto Rico, and when he arrives in Puerto Rico, he kind of sets his sights on a few of the sister missionaries and begins kind of giving them some gifts and flying, you know, putting them in the outer islands, going to the outer islands, having some really close to the mission home. And he begins engaging in some inappropriate behavior with these sister missionaries. So one particular sister missionary, and it doesn't say if she was a victim or if she just thought the behavior was really weird, she calls her stake president at home, which, you know, she's not supposed to do on her mission, but she calls her stake president and she says, yeah, this is what's going on. Is this normal? And her stake president says, no. Thanks right. for letting me know. Bye. He calls Salt Lake, and literally, I think like 24, 48 hours later, Salt Lake is down there. They sent Craig Zwick is who they sent down there. He was a 70 at the time. They released the mission president. They sent him home. They excommunicated him.
They interviewed all of the sister missionaries.
Mm-hmm. They offered the sister missionaries psychological counseling if they wanted. They asked the sister missionaries if they wanted to press criminal charges. None of the sister missionaries elected to press criminal charges, but at least they were given that option.
Right.
And anyway, so just an entirely different outcome. So I was glad to hear that.
I know. It was good to hear. And like, bravo to that sister missionary. I think somewhere in the story I read, it just talked about how, you know, this upcoming generation of women and girls are just more...
Vocal. And exactly.
Know to speak up.
Exactly.
So she's kind of the hero in the story.
She is the hero in the story. And I have to say one last note. His name.
Oh. I could
this
not.
This is a what were your parents thinking?
This is going to be on one of those worst name.
Okay. So his first name is Philanderer. His second name is Knox. His third name is Smart. And he's a number three. That means there's two before him. Now, I cannot comment on the moral state of the two before him. Obviously, we know the moral state of number three. But really, if you're naming your kid Philanderer, aren't
it's
you just
so
setting...
Weird.
I guess it was a popular name maybe 100, 150 years ago. But really, you're setting your kid up for failure when you choose that name. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, it's really... It's odd.
We'll get to baby names later.
Yeah, we're going to talk baby names.
We are going to talk baby names.
This one would definitely go on the list of...
don't use.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Exactly. Okay, so next story we want to catch up on.
Oh, we won't go into huge details, but we wanted to hit on the Golden State Killer.
Yes.
Story that broke last week of the decades-long, you know, cold case in California of this...
Because we love a good DNA story.
Yes. Of the guy, and he'd raped like 40 to 50 women, and he'd killed at least 12, I think, people, and burglarized, huge crime spree. It was big in like 70s and 80s, and then he died down and went dark, and nobody had found him.
Nobody knew.
They finally found him through DNA, which we love to talk DNA and how like Ancestry.com is breaking open the world of scandals.
Yes, 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 yes.
So I don't believe they used Ancestry.com, but they took whatever DNA they had from the crime scene and they submitted it to some public database of DNA, and were able to somehow narrow down family members and then narrow it down to him.
Exactly.
Correct?
Yeah. So there's this public database where you can take your DNA profile that you get like from Ancestry.com or 23andMe. You can upload it to this public open forum database and see if you match anybody in there. And so they created this fake profile. They loaded up the DNA and there was a match to some ancestral person. They don't say, you know, if it was like three cousins removed or whatever it was. So they get that match.
Crazy.
And then they do what all good LDS people do. They do their genealogy. And they start...
No search warrant required.
No search warrant required.
Crazy.
So they start determining, you know, cousins, uncles, aunts, until they narrow it down to somebody who is in... lives in California, is the age that they think. They narrow it down to this guy, and then they go get... discarded DNA that he has apparently left in a public place, test it, and of course it matches their crime scene sample. So pretty amazing stuff, these DNA tests.
I know. And just over the past couple of years, how much has come out of
that. Oh, yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see what different twists and turns it takes, like legally, because I believe when you sign up for those, you give them your extra discarded DNA.
Exactly.
Like, I think, I don't know what the rules are. They are not the ones that worked with the police, and they very quickly said, this wasn't us.
Yeah. Well, and I think I heard Ancestry and 23andMe say, look, you know, we don't share this information, you know, publicly with the courts.
Right. But I have heard, I don't know if this is true. Uh-huh. It might be rumor. I have heard that they can take your extra DNA and use it for whatever research purposes. Yeah. I don't know.
But anyway, so another DNA story.
Yes.
As you sent a text to me, Maury Povich is going to be out of business at this rate.
He's no longer needed.
He really isn't. All right. Well, shall we now move on to baby stuff?
Yes. We thought it would be fun in honor of baby to talk all things baby and Mormon, being Mormon with babies.
Mormon babies.
Because what is what is more Mormon than
there is nothing more Mormon than babies. Popping out a baby. I'm sorry. That's what the good Lord sent you to this earth to do, to pop out a baby.
Yes.
Or two or three or four.
Yes.
Anyway.
So we have to start with baby names.
Yes.
Because this has been on our minds.
Okay, folks. She hasn't picked out a baby name yet. She does not have a baby name.
No.
She has a list, but not a name.
Not a big deal. Okay. This is my second PSA for the night.
Okay.
For pregnant ladies.
Okay.
Okay, first one about the itching.
Yes.
Second PSA, if you do not have a baby name, don't tell people you don't have a baby name. People flip out.
And offer all sorts of unsolicited advice.
Yes, they can't handle it. I've had a lot of people who are like super, super concerned about finding me a baby name. And when I say I don't have a name, I don't have one because I do have a hard time with boy names, but I do have a list of like, okay, I'll be okay, people. I'll figure it out. I don't know. It's so funny because with the girls, when they were born, we never had a name.
Yeah.
But we always had a list of, you know, four or five that we both liked and were on the radar going into the hospital.
Yeah.
Nobody ever gave us advice. Is this a boy thing?
I have no idea. You know, when I had Mark, we had it narrowed down to two names. He was either going to be Mark Richard or he was going to be Ryan Richmond, because Richard is his father's name and Richmond is our grandfather's middle name. So for us, it was kind of like, well, I want to see the whites of his eyes before I decide. But I had it narrowed down to two.
I don't know. We have certain family members that are very concerned.
Very concerned. Quite vocal.
So
I've given you numerous suggestions.
I have decided that the better strategy for the future, not that we're doing this again.
We're getting to family size next.
For the future, the better option would be to say, yes, we have some that we like.
But we haven't decided, so we're not sharing. Or you could just say, we've narrowed it down to a few, but we're not sharing right now.
Right. Because we haven't decided yet.
That would be
just
good.
Just don't leave it open-ended.
Yeah.
Don't ever say,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't have any good boy names. I can't choose boy names, which is the truth. I appreciate advice. I mean, I'm open to suggestions, but it's a little overwhelming. That's okay.
All right. So let's talk about how Mormons pick their baby names.
Yes.
And different baby names. So one of the more popular ways to pick your baby name is obviously to go back into your genealogy and look and see, you know, what ancestral names do I have?
And this is what she's been trying to get me to do.
Oh, I so have.
She hasn't been sending me lists of 50 like some people.
Oh, I've narrowed it to one.
But she has one family name she's obsessed with, and she keeps telling me to get on Family Search and see what I find. And I've gotten on. I haven't seriously looked, but tell them the name.
I will.
Obsessed
with. I will tell them the name. Okay, so We are direct descendants of Levi Savage. If you do not know who Levi Savage is, go watch the movie 17 Miracles. So we have several cousins who have named their boys Levi. So I consider Levi kind of off the table. So I keep saying to Ariane, you need to name your kid Savage. Savage Smith. How brutal does that sound? I mean, that is like a strong name. You're naming him after an ancestor. I said, you could call him Gage for short if you didn't like Savage. But who's going to mess with a kid named Savage?
No. Her teenage boys are all over this because apparently that's like
Teenage boys love this.
This is the cool name now.
It's the cool thing to say. Oh, that's so savage. Mm. So yes, my teenage boys are all over this.
No, never happening.
I know that. And this has kind of been a running joke. But because you have chosen not to disclose your kids' names on our podcast, I will probably refer to said child on the podcast as Savage Smith. That is not going to be his real name, but that's going to be the name his Aunt Tiffany calls him.
My 8-year-old is full on threatening me that she will call this baby Connor. She doesn't care what we name the baby. She says, Mom, I don't care what you name him. I'm calling him Connor. And I believe her.
Oh, yeah, I believe her too.
She's got the will for that.
Yes, she does. So there you go.
So he might be called different names by just different people.
Well, you know, he's already going to have 3 sisters who think he's his mother and his biological mother and his aunt. Poor kid's going to be so confused. Okay, well, let's just, I've pulled up our family search just to grab a few names that, you know, could be kind of fun. You know, what's funny is we have a grandmother, and her first name was Clarissa, and her second name was Gail. She went by Gail because she hated Clarissa. And if I recall correctly, I think it was our cousin Ryan used Clarissa as a middle name for one of his daughters, and she was still alive when that happened. And she was just mortified.
Oh, she was mad?
Oh, not mad, but she was just like, ew, I hate that name.
She really didn't like that name?
She really didn't like that name. Why would you use it?
Oh, wow.
Was her thought. Huh. But our youngest sister, Ciaran, whom we've had on the podcast before, she loves that name. She has laid claim to that name and has made it known for years that nobody...
Oh, that's like a whole we're not other using that thing name. We could talk about, laying claim to names.
Oh, yes.
This happens a lot in families.
It does.
Especially Mormon families, because they're big and they'll start to have their kids at the same time and people lay claim to names and it can...
Deep divisions.
I've seen some divisions.
Deep divisions. Anyway, so like I said, you know, you can get onto Family Search if you're looking for baby names and, you know, perhaps find a name, an ancestral name that means that is important. And the other thing too is a lot of names that were popular 100 years or so ago, you know, such as like Emma, are really in the last few years have made a comeback. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
the classics,
you could choose a classic name with a family connection, that yet doesn't sound in our day and age old fashioned.
Right.
It would have been when we were born, but not right now.
Right. If you'd done that in the '80s, they would have been,
Exactly. Exactly. So then, of course, we have the very typical names that can only be considered Mormon. If you name your kid Nephi.
Right.
If you name your kid Helaman.
Alma.
Alma. Ammon. Ammon.
Which I don't feel like, do you see a lot of that anymore? I feel like there was more of that back in the 80s.
Yeah, I don't see as much of that anymore. Uh-huh. What I see now is instead of Book of Mormon prophets, people are using modern day prophets, like naming their kid Monson. Right.
Yes.
Naming their kid Kimball.
Dieter.
Dieter. We saw a Dieter. I'm guessing there's going to be a surge in the boy name of Nelson. That is my prediction for 2018. We're going to have a lot of Nelsons out there.
Maybe, except if you're a Simpsons fan. Remember that kid?
That's true. Yeah,
that
kind of
messes with it.
That does kind of mess with it. So anyway, so yes, I think that's the new trendy Mormon thing is pick the last name of some apostle that you love and name your kid that apostle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And then we get to really trendy names.
Oh, we get to trendy names. Okay, so we just have
Utah is has to be the capital of trendy names.
Yes. And I don't know what I think the phenomenon in Utah is just there's so many kids and people want to stand out. So they want to do something kind of different. So my favorite articles on trendy Utah names are on the By Common Consent website.
Yes.
And there is an author, Jessie Jensen, and she has for many years kind of compiled lists.
She hasn't done one yet for this year.
I know.
She usually does it in the spring after the names for the previous
year. So
get released.
She usually waits till the names get released, and she'll go through the Utah ones. and pick out like the unusual ones. And, you know, Utah has a reputation for, you know, spelling things different, spelling things with K's and Y's and double E's.
They just replace vowels right and left. Yes. And don't like this vowel? Put that one in. So, use the same pronunciation.
Totally. So if you look at like the most popular baby names in Utah, they very much align with the most popular names in the country.
Exactly.
They line up. But these are the
Very unusual spellings.
These are the names on the outskirts. Okay. Lots of these are the most popular names, but they don't show up in the top 10 in Utah because only a handful of people spelled them. Anyways. So this is her list. So I'm just going to hit on a few from her list from a year ago.
Yes. So this was published about a year ago. These were names.
These were 2016
names.
We are waiting for her to publish this year.
So Common Consent, Jesse Jensen, please update us.
We love your list.
We love your list.
We think you're hysterical.
Yes, please.
We think you do such a good job of curating the best of the Utah names.
Okay. So let's talk about some on the 2016 list.
So some of the 2016, she says some of the typical common ones that we've seen for many years, you know, Brinley with two E's, Paxton, Jackson, Braxton with an X, you know.
Yes. the Axton names.
Yes. Finley, Kylie, Kylan, lots of Y's and double N's and double E's. Oakley is one that's been pretty popular for a while. Many ways to spell Oakley.
Oh, and then, of course, there are the let's name our kid after a place on a map.
Oh, right. So they have the map edition.
The names, map edition.
Like Boston. Boston spelled with a Y.
Yes.
Brooklyn, Oakland, Hudson.
McKinley,
London. You could go on forever.
Yes, exactly. Oh, and then there was a fun one, Emmett. They spelled it E-M-M-I-T-T.
Yes.
An interesting spelling of Emmett.
And then she has this category called everyone's favorite category.
WTF.
WTF.
We'll let you decide what you want WTF to stand for.
So, and in this category, she just puts like the really weird ones. Like one was Breslin.
Yes.
Keslin. Bodrie, like B-O-D-R-E-E, Bodrie.
Bodrie, yes.
Weird. Raiden Bain Riker. I can't figure out, is that a name and two middle names?
Or Raiden Bain Riker.
Raiden Bain Riker.
I think that's the whole thing. You know, but here's the deal. When I hear the name Riker, I think of Law and Order and Riker's Prison, where they send all the bad guys.
Ooh, that's not a good association.
That's not a good association.
Reagan Lene.
Okay.
I don't know. Interesting.
They had Hunter Rage, R-A-I-G-E.
R-A-I-G-E.
And then, of course, they had one, and she called it the absolute worst name of the year. It was Gentry, but it was spelled J-E-N-T-R-E-I-G-H. That poor child.
So she's hilarious. So you should get on and go back and read some of her name articles by Common Consent.
Well, and the funny thing is okay, so modern, this is not a new Utah thing. You know, you go back about, you know, 30, 40 years and you had the Laverls and the LaPearls and, you know, you took an LA and you put LA in front of any name.
Right.
Just kind of like you add E's and Y's in today's names.
Right.
And so
just mix the syllables.
You just mix the syllables
mix and
around.
Match. Yeah.
Exactly.
So we love that. Oh, and the guys. The twin guys.
Oh, yes. Oh, don't forget that.
The twin guys had a funny meme.
Yes.
A couple weeks ago that they put up on the twin page.
Okay, so we're going to hold this up for our Facebook fans. If you are listening to us on the podcast, go to the twin page. It's called If Mormon Moms Renamed Utah Cities. And they took the Utah cities and like Logan, for example, and instead of spelling it L-O-G-A-N, they spelled it L-O-H-G-Y-N.
Yes. Ogden is O-G-D-Y-N. Draper, D-R-A-E-P-R-P-Y-R. You know.
Anyway.
Typical.
It's a funny meme, and it's a nod to Utah names, which we are going to just associate with Mormon names.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. So now we're moving on to family size.
Oh, we got to talk family size.
Oh, you know, this could be a really hot button issue.
I know.
Because how do you know when you're done?
Right.
And that's the question.
Don't you feel like it has, I don't know what the data is on this, but don't you feel like Mormon families have shrunk
in
modern day for sure?
Absolutely.
I feel like 4 is the new 6.
Oh, for sure.
And I feel like 3 is the new 4. And anything over 6 is just equivalent to having 10.
It's just nuts. Because I feel like when we were growing up in our ward, I mean, practically every family had at least 6 kids.
Right.
For someone to have between 6 to 8 to 9 kids was not an unusual thing at all. And it's very unusual now.
Right. Although it's so interesting. I think geographically it differs too. Just because coming here from Portland, we noticed right away, like in Portland, in our ward, the average is about 3, 2 or 3 kids. And we noticed right away when we got to our ward here, we were like, whoa, there are big families. There are a lot of families with 5 kids, which for us coming from Portland was,
oh yeah,
that was big.
And like you had 3 kids in Portland and they looked at you awful.
And some, you know, we've got some lots of families with 5 or 6. So I think geographically, but I wonder if a lot of that has to do with just cost of living.
You know, I mean, I'm sure it does. I'm sure that it does because it's, I mean, it's just flat out expensive, as you know, to have kids. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that every mom, and especially Mormon women, you have that point where you're like, okay, do I have enough kids? Or am I going to like regret if I don't have one more?
Yeah.
And so I had a friend who always used to call it, who used to say, the number of kids that you should have plus one, so that you can make sure that you didn't leave an empty person up in heaven.
You got to get the plus one.
You got to get the plus one in there,
so that you're not always wondering.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's so true. We definitely got to that point where, for me, but with this one, I know for sure. I'm like, nope. I know. No question. And that's where you want to be.
Exactly.
You don't want to be like on the fence. Ugh. But I have to say, I never have felt pressure like from cultural Mormon pressure.
More internal pressure.
At all. It's more about what do I want. But also at the same time, I've always known I wanted at least 3 kids.
Yeah.
And so I wonder, do moms feel that pressure that only want 2 or only want 1? I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
They probably feel it different than we do, right?
I don't know. I've never really had a conversation, you know, with someone about that.
I haven't either. But I mean, I'm grateful that I have never felt outside pressure as far as what my family size should be, or even just, well, everybody has this many. No, it's always felt like my own
choice.
Decision.
Yeah.
And I've never felt pressure from old conference talks or
Well, and that's how I felt too, because I knew when I was pregnant with Katie, I was like, I'm done, you know, and it's a whole different experience, I think. And you're probably experiencing this now when you know it's your last pregnancy, when you know it's your last baby, when you know I'm not doing this again until I have grandkids. And even then I'm not having the baby.
Right.
So it's a whole different thing. But you know, what was interesting for me is, you know, so I have these 3 kids, I think I'm grand, and then I end up divorced and I'm like, now I've got 6. I mean, if anybody had ever told, and I love my 6 kids, do not get me wrong. If anybody had ever told me I would have 6 kids, I would say,
Right.
But for me, because I am not a baby person, I don't really like the baby fit phase. They came to me potty trained and sleeping through the night and able to dress themselves and shower and take care of themselves. And so, I got to have them when they're fun.
Right. Yes. So, big difference between having 6 and birthing 6.
Very true. Very true. So yeah, but I do. I agree with you. Over the years, I think that has definitely shifted, and family size is a lot smaller these days.
It's smaller. And I think there's not the pressure that there once was. I don't know if there was that pressure. In the 80s, did moms feel...
In the 50s or 60s? You know, I don't know. And I don't know if part of it was, you know, a birth control issue, because birth control came around in the 60s.
That's true. And there were some old church
That said church culture that said no birth control.
Some old talks that are outdated.
And these days they are smart enough to say, this is a decision right. between husbands and wives and the Lord. But I'm like, now that's an answer I like.
Yes. So
anyway, all right, moving on. Our next mommy topic is mommy blogs.
Oh, mommy blogs.
Yes.
We just, I don't know. We had to hit on mommy blogs.
We did because there is an, I think, an inordinate number of Mormon right. mommy bloggers.
And some of the original ones, like when mommy blogging yeah. first became popular,
were Mormon.
It was probably at least over 10 years ago
oh, yeah.
when
oh,
it
yeah.
really first hit big time. Lots of them were Mormon. And there have been lots of articles that have been written on kind of this phenomenon mm-hmm. of Mormon.
Why mommy blogging.
Why are so many Mormons doing this?
Exactly.
And some of the articles.
And they all look like they're carved out of cream cheese.
Some of the articles said it's kind of a natural fit because it's like family history
yeah.
and writing and preserving your memories, yet putting a spin on it, like a life yeah. lifestyle spin on it.
Because some of them focus on specifically mom things, but mm-hmm. others focus on fashion and
right.
beauty and makeup and working out.
Well, and I think that has been the latest.
That's been the trend lately.
Trend. Yeah. I think a lot of them when they started were crafts.
Crafts.
And they've come in waves. A lot
yeah.
of them when they started were crafts and Pinterest type things. Mm-hmm. A lot of food ones when they first started.
Yes.
Recipes and foods.
Yes. And you have a couple favorite recipes. We talked about that.
I do love the food blogs.
Yeah.
The Mormon mom food blogs. There have been some categories that are more spiritual.
Yeah.
So the range, there was a lot of photography early mm-hmm. on, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the range is all over the place, but I do feel like in like the past, you know, 5+ yeah. years, it really has shifted. The ones that are the most mm-hmm. popular are these lifestyle
yeah.
Mormon blogs, where
exactly.
it's just about kind of presenting this beautiful lifestyle, you know, a little bit of cooking, a little bit of home decor, a little bit of fashion, a little bit of travel, a little bit
yeah.
of fitness, like a little bit of everything,
yeah.
kind of presenting
yeah.
this lifestyle. And it's different.
I am equal parts mortified and equal parts fascinated.
Yeah.
Now, my fascination part is I look at this and I go, that is so unreal and unrealistic. And how do you even live like that? Because it just seems such a kind of fantasy that's created.
Right.
So that's kind of the... That's kind of the mortification part of it.
Right.
You know, the fascinated part of it is, really, you can put this out there in good faith?
Well, there's a spectrum. Some are very much more down to earth
yes.
and real. And then there are others that are...
it's so fantasy.
So fantasy. Yeah.
You know, they live in these 8,000 square foot houses, seemingly have endless amounts of money, spend $800 on shoes. You know, it's not a big deal to spend $2,000 on a handbag. I can't even comprehend.
Right.
In any universe, I cannot comprehend that.
And like gorgeous photography.
Yes.
Like they must just have... professional.
I know. You like
they must
a photographer
have an
that lives with you?
Follows them and takes pictures.
I know.
So it's really interesting. And it's interesting the turn that they've taken towards Instagram.
Yes.
Because blogs were the initial
with rage. Yes.
Rage. And now if you're really gonna be big, you can keep your blog, your website.
And link to it on Instagram.
You've gotta get into the social
yeah.
media stuff.
And it's not Facebook, it's really Instagram.
Right.
Okay, so you looked up some top Mormon bloggers.
On the website, A Peculiar People, they
uh-huh.
had a list from last fall of the top 11 Mormon mommy bloggers.
Okay.
And this was interesting because I had heard of some. I hadn't heard of most.
Oh, okay.
But I clicked around to see, and they're
and
very
then,
similar. A lot of these are the lifestyle ones.
And you checked their Instagram followers too,
yes,
right?
Yes, I did.
I think is so interesting.
I was really curious which ones
yeah.
had the most followers. So probably the two on the list that mm-hmm. are probably the most well-known mm-hmm. among general Mormon population is Al Caraway.
Yes.
Who is the tattooed
Mormon. Tattooed Mormon.
Motivational speaker.
Yes.
Motivational writer. So hers is... more of a motivational type
yeah.
stuff. I don't think she's quite as into the fashion
yeah.
and lifestyle stuff. The other one that most Mormons know are the...
Now how many Instagram followers did Al Caraway have?
she's on the lower end compared to the major business fashion bloggers. She has 185,000 Instagram followers.
Okay.
Which is significant.
That is nothing to...
Very significant.
Nothing to hold your head low about.
Until you see what some of these others have.
Okay. So, and maybe you will be like, I'm going to crawl away in shame.
The other one that probably every Mormon mom knows is... Do you say Nini?
I say Nini.
Nini.
Nini Dialogues.
The Nini Dialogues. And of course, this is Stephanie Nielsen, the woman that got in the plane crash. How long ago? Has it been 10 years?
It's been 10 years. It was 2008. So it's almost up on 10 years.
Okay. And so she, of course, had her blog before the plane crash, got in the plane crash, got burned, was able to recover. Mm-hmm. And she has... kept up her blog, and it's still lifestyle, mm-hmm. but she also adds a lot mm-hmm. of spiritual in
she
there.
She does. She does.
Since this experience she's had. And so she on Instagram only has 100,000 followers.
Oh.
I was surprised. I thought it would be close to 1 million because she's written a best-selling book, and like she's well known not just among Mormons.
Yeah.
But,
her story received national coverage.
Right. So not as many. Okay. But you know, maybe her blog's more... her thing than her Instagram. So I don't know how often she keeps it up. So these are some of the other ones they had on their list. The Girls with Glasses. I hadn't heard of them. They're fairly new. They do music, style, motherhood. It's two girls.
Oh, one of those is Brooke White.
One of them was on
American. Yeah, she was on American Idol. I remember watching that season of American Idol. I really like her.
So they're pretty new. They only have 35,000 followers. So they're still growing.
Yeah. Okay.
There's one called 71 Toes, and it's about the joy of motherhood. She does not have Instagram.
Oh, very interesting.
She has held back, but apparently she's a very popular blogger, and she's been in it for a long time, like 10 years, 10 plus years. So, Brooke Romney writes, you've followed her, haven't you?
You know, I've seen a few of her articles online, like in the Deseret News, but I haven't looked at her blog. Okay.
She's not a huge Instagrammer. I think she's more of a writer and blogger. So there's one called Mint Arrow that is pretty popular. The writer is Corinne Stokey. I'm not sure how
I haven't heard of that one.
I'm probably saying it horribly, but she's fashion and beauty, and she posts a lot of like deals.
Oh.
So that's always kind of fun. I like to find a deal.
Who doesn't like to find a deal?
Yes. There's one called Love Taza.
This one I've read.
This one you've read.
This one I've read. Okay.
She has pretty pictures. I looked on her Instagram.
She has really gorgeous pictures.
They all have beautiful pictures.
They do.
With pops of color and just pretty to look at.
I don't think she has an assistant. I think both her and her husband do it together. I think that, you know, because she's talked about her camera and stuff before. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think they do it together, and they've just learned how to use their camera very well.
Very well. Well, she lives in New York City.
Yes.
And so hers deals... talks a lot about her family in New York City and ventures. So that's kind of fun to see.
It is.
Like, how do you live in a big city with small children?
Well, and she has 3 children, and she's expecting twins sometime in the month of May. So I am sure New York City is just appalled that this woman is going to have 5 kids.
She'll be toting all those kids on the subway.
I know. They're just going to be like, you're ruining the environment having children.
I know. And she's got a lot of followers on Instagram. She's got over 400.
Okay. 400,000.
Over 400,000. Yes. There's one called Say Yes. Liz Stanley. I hadn't heard of that one before.
I haven't heard of that one either.
Pink Peonies.
Yes.
By Rachel Parcell. You told me about this one.
I told you about this one. This is one of the ones that mortifies me and fascinates me.
This is the one where I can't stop getting on and looking at her Instagram because it's so fascinating.
I know. And she's got a sister. Her sister is Emily Jackson. Uh-huh. And her sister, hers is called the Ivory Lane. Her sister isn't as popular as her, but they do a lot of cross posts together. Right. And they're equally fascinating and mortifying to me.
Well, and this girl, Pink Peonies, she has really turned into business.
Yes. She has a whole clothing line. Yeah.
She's got close to 1 million followers. And
wow.
I'm guessing she makes a lot of money off this now. So
I would think that she probably does. That's how she affords her $800 shoes.
There is one called The Barefoot Blonde.
Okay.
And it's
I've never heard of that one.
By Amber Fillerup Clark. I hadn't heard of it either. It's beauty, fitness, fashion, kind of everything. Uh-huh. But she also has turned it into a business where she has created a hair extension line.
Oh.
And she must be doing well. She's got over 1 million followers on Instagram.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
That's a lot of followers. Okay, I may have to check her out then.
I'm beginning to notice that where they really get the followers is when they can spring it off into some kind of business.
You're right. That is probably very
some
true.
Some kind of fashion business.
Yeah.
And then they get all kinds of followers because, you know, people get into it. And there's one called Kara Lauren. I hadn't heard of that.
I haven't heard of that one either.
But she's got like 800,000
dang, she got a lot of followers too.
Yeah.
Okay.
So those are just a few that they hit on, but it's just interesting and fascinating. There was another great article. We should link to it after the show. It was done by, I think it was Deseret News a while ago, about a year ago. And it was, Are Utah and Mormon Mommy Bloggers Creating a False Perception of Reality? And it was just an interesting article about everything we've been talking about and how people perceive them and how they got started. And they interviewed a lot of these, some of these originals and got their thoughts on it. And obviously that's never their intentions, but there are some that, I mean, and obviously everybody who posts something online puts their best picture.
Well, yeah.
I mean, even if you only have 50 followers, you're going to put your best picture up.
Exactly. So, I mean, you are, you're going to, you're probably not going to be, you know, blogging and talking about your, you know, huge zit on your face. I don't know.
So I don't know. So it's just interesting to article to read to see some of the thoughts and
exactly
on how this is affecting people. And somebody in the article said, you know, it's great to read these things. It can be inspirational. It can be beautiful. But just kind of know your triggers and know your limits and know when it's too much and you need to not be looking at it every day because it's making you feel bad.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. And you know what? And I think that that's really the key right there. You know, is if you're looking at these for ideas, but, you know, if anytime personally for you, it crosses a line, you're comparing, it's bringing you down, then at that point in time, you need to say, that's her life. That's not mine.
Right.
I have special things in mind. I'm just going to set that on a shelf for a little while.
Right.
So.
Right. And always keep in mind it's, you know, their business. And,
yes.
And it's like their.
Exactly.
It's their thing. So.
All righty. All right. Let's move on to another very hot button Mormon mom issue. And this is a working moms versus stay at home moms.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
The classic divide.
Although I have to say this is a divide that I think has happened more in the last 30 to 40 years because, you know, you look at culturally, like back in the 1800s, you know, and probably into the early 1900s, what women did. Yes, they had children, but you know what? They were growing wheat. They were grinding wheat. They were taking care of the chickens. They were milking cows. You know, they were doing all of these things around the house that we now have modern conveniences for. And so, you know, the children weren't the focus, kind of like what they are today.
Right. And I think not all of that focus isn't Mormon cultural necessarily. I think just our
society
in general.
Yeah, exactly. Society
has put
in general.
Such a focus on children. So some of this is Mormon culture, but I think a lot of it is not.
Exactly.
The suburb that we lived in outside of Portland was a pretty high end.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of stay-at-home moms there that were not LDS.
Oh, interesting.
And a lot of similar pressures and challenges between the working group and the not working group.
Very interesting.
And it wasn't... So this happens outside of the church too.
It does.
The kind of the divide and the pressure and the... Am I doing the right thing? Kind of.
Exactly. Well, the Deseret News had an article. They were talking about it was originally published in September of 2017, and then it was updated in March of 2018. And they were actually talking about the wage gap between men and women in Utah. They were doing a series on that. And so one of their things that they were talking about was, you know, stay-at-home moms versus working moms and the culture that the church creates with regards to that. You know, and they talked about, you know, how in World War II, you know, all sorts of women went to work. Then the men came home, and then in the the 1950s, you know, that's kind of when really the focus within the church's culture began to be on the families. Mm-hmm. And you would have, for example, they were talking about an editorial in the Church News in 1956 that went so far as to call earning mothers one of the greatest threats we have to a stable home life in America. And then, of course, in the 60s and 70s, you know, feminism kind of came into vogue. And so there was all... And that made a lot of Mormon women kind of feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And then President Kimball... bless his heart, said numerous divorces can be traced directly to the day when the wife left the home and went out into the world into employment.
Those are some heavy words.
Exactly. And you know what? And maybe in the 70s, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't know if that's something that the women in the church needed to hear then because of how feminism was or if that was more tied to his cultural upbringing. But, you know, then we have in 1987, and so this was President Benson, and I almost think, I can't remember if this was a BYU devotional, but I clearly didn't listen very well, because it says, he said, contrary to conventional wisdom, a mother's calling is in the home and not in the marketplace. And mm-hmm. I would have been a freshman in college when he said that. Anyway, so over
You're
the...
skipping those emotionals, aren't you?
Yeah. Anyway, but then it goes on to talk about, you know, over the last few years, the church leaders have kind of taken more of a softened stance on that because right. There are a variety of reasons why women choose to work and why women choose to stay at home. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, there have been times in my life where I have not financially needed to work, but I've worked because I've wanted to. Right. And then there have been other times in my life where I have financially needed to work to be able to support myself and my family. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of diversity in terms of why women work. And one of the things that Quentin L. Cook said is he warned against judging sisters as being less valiant if they make the decision to work outside the house. And I really liked something that Julie Beck said. She said, and this applies to everybody, she says, the question of whether or not to work is the wrong question. A question is, am I aligned with the Lord's vision of me, what he needs me to become, and the roles and responsibilities he gave me in heaven that are not negotiable?
Right. I also loved in this article, they talked about it from a mental health perspective, mm-hmm. and they just talked about... the best situation for mental mm-hmm. health is when women have the ability to choose what they feel is best for them and their mm-hmm. family, and that moms are at a higher risk for depression if they want to work but stayed home, and as well, they're also at a higher risk for depression if they wanted to stay home but had to go to like a low-quality job
yes.
that they didn't like. And so I think that's a huge part of it, and every mom is different in what they need for
exactly.
themselves and for their families. I worked my oldest child's first year mm-hmm. of birth, just part-time, mm-hmm. and I loved it because after giving birth, it was an easy transition mm-hmm. for me. And when I quit, we moved out of state, and so I quit that job, and I didn't go back to work. It wasn't mm-hmm. financially worth it for me for
yeah.
what I can earn with a sociology degree.
So you're putting a plug in for getting a sociology degree.
Yes.
But hey, you got a degree.
I did get a degree.
That you can use for retail, because isn't that the number one career in sociology?
Yes, it is retail. Okay. So when we moved to Oregon, I didn't pursue finding another job. I just stayed at home, and I have grown into it. I've grown to love it. But I wouldn't say it was like an immediate, easy transition. I kind of had to find my groove, like what worked
yeah.
for me, like how to make sure I have enough adult interaction to be fulfilled.
Yes.
You know, going to play groups.
Yes.
I found that my thing is going to the gym.
And you know what? And that is, I think that is so uh-huh. important for stay-at-home
right.
moms to have that adult interaction.
Right.
So your thing is going to the gym.
So my thing is going to the gym. I get exercise, endorphins, and I get adult interaction.
Yeah. And they have a play area that you can drop your kid off
at. My kids get to play. So, and you know, I know a lot of other moms that uh-huh. their thing is getting really involved in school.
Mm-hmm. In the PTA.
Mm-hmm. And so I think... If you're going to stay home and uh-huh. and maybe you love it, or maybe you mm-hmm. grow to love it, or you find mm-hmm. a way to love it. I think everybody's different. And some moms are just happy to be home and not, don't need as much of
yeah.
that. And then yeah. there are other moms that yeah. need to work, and that's yeah. great too. And I feel like the other moms my age mm-hmm. for the many years mm-hmm. that I've been a mom, at least at church, have been very open and accepting of everyone. I've never felt like there's been too big of a divide.
Yeah.
Although I know there is a little bit, because the moms that work just don't get to interact as much
exactly.
with the moms that don't.
Exactly.
I don't think it's any intentional, like, we can't play with you.
Yeah.
I just think that the moms at work just don't get as much FaceTime.
Yeah.
So I hope they don't feel
yeah.
left out. But I
yeah.
know that if they do, that yeah. could be a big part.
Yeah. You know, I think, honestly, because I think the younger women, they're mm-hmm. just because of the attitude of kind of how the leaders have shifted in the last, you know, 25, 30 years, maybe not 30, but 20 to 25, mm-hmm. that, you know, women your age are far more or less judgmental. What I find is women my age, or more importantly, like 10 to 15 years older than me, mm-hmm. that are super judgmental. When I first moved into my ward in Provo, I had one little girl, I had Lauren, and she was about 2. And I remember going to a Relief Society activity, and this woman came up to me, and mm-hmm. there was me and this other mom that had a baby about the same age, that were standing there, and we were both had been in the ward for maybe a couple of weeks, not very long. So this sister turns to me and, you know, asks me, you know, where'd you move from? You know, the typical questions. And I don't know how it came up, but, you know, I mentioned that, you know, I work at that point in time. I worked as an administrative law judge. And I said, yeah, I, you know, work, you know, full time up in Salt Lake. And she just went, oh. And then she turned to the other mom and she said, do you work? And the other mom said, oh, no, I'm a stay at home mom. She could not fall over all over herself fast enough to be gushing at how wonderful. Oh, it's so nice you get to stay home with your kids and da 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 da. I mean, I was chopped liver at that point in time. Now, I could have been totally offended, right. but I was not, because just as Sister Beck said, you know, this is a personal decision. And I knew in my heart that I was right with the Lord. And so I really didn't care what her opinion was, because the only opinion that really mattered to me was the Lord's. And if I felt like I could look the Lord in the face and felt like I was being a good parent and fulfilling my responsibility, then I was okay. I mean, I kind of laughed at it, mm-hmm. but you know,
so you've had a few.
I've had a few. So
I'm sure lots of working moms do get those.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think the other thing that is hard about being a working mom, I mean, I only did it for 1 year.
Yeah.
So it's not like I have a ton of experience. Yeah. Only did it for 1 year, but I think it's hard when you do go socially and interact yeah. with the stay-at-home moms,
yeah.
that a lot of times they don't ask you about your job.
No.
Do you find that frustrating?
Oh, absolutely.
Because that's a big part of your life, and you want to talk mom
exactly.
stuff. Everybody wants to talk mom stuff. But that's another big
yeah.
part of your life, and I think it probably makes you feel really good when somebody acknowledges
yeah.
that and
yeah.
asks you, how's your job going?
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. You know, speaking of that, that is so funny that you mentioned that, because Darren's no longer the young men's president, but he was the young men's president in our ward for 4 years. Anyway, 2 of those years, I got asked to, they have a stake activity where they have all of the teenage, not the, well, the juniors and seniors, they do this retreat with the junior and senior boys. And so they had asked me to come up and help cook at the retreat. And so I'm in the kitchen with probably 6 or 7 other sisters mm-hmm. from my stake cooking at this retreat. All of these sisters are stay-at-home moms. And they are all very nice sisters. And, you know, nobody ever said or did anything mm-hmm. to, you know, make me feel uncomfortable or anything like that. But it was kind of like my job was the elephant in the room. You know, mm-hmm. they didn't know how to address it,
right.
how to talk about it. You know,
they were probably worried about offending you.
I don't know. It was just, I just remember thinking to myself, oh my gosh, you know. And again, they did nothing wrong. They said nothing wrong, but I just remember thinking, man, I am in a whole different world than they are. And again, I feel good about my decision, so right. I don't worry about right. it. But, you know, it is something that a lot of moms struggle with. And even though I feel good about my decision, I sometimes think, you know, am I paying enough attention to the kids? You know, I come home tired right. and I need to, you know, engage with them. And so it is. It's always a struggle to find balance. But I think mm-hmm. that's true whether you're a working mom outside the home or whether you are a working mom inside the home. Right. You always have to find balance. Mm-hmm. And that's hard.
Yeah. So, so it's just an interesting topic. And I think moms are getting much better about being nice to each other and
yes.
and not as judgy, but we can all reach out to each other.
Exactly.
More, bridge that gap.
Hopefully, we can minister.
Hopefully there's no gap.
Exactly. So. All right. So our next story that we okay. want to talk about, mom related. Oh,
this is a mom related story. This is a sad one. This is a hard one. This one came out, I think, just a couple weeks ago. This is about allergies in church, mm-hmm. Particularly food allergies in church. This was, where was this story from? Was this LDS Living?
Yeah, I think it was on LDS Living. I don't know where the background story occurred, but that's where we saw the right. article was on LDS Living.
So it started out with a really sad story about a teenage boy in Utah. I think he was 14, and he had a peanut allergy. And he was at Mutual one night, and it was time to leave, and the leaders had extra cookies mm-hmm. they were giving away to the kids, and he said, oh, does this have nuts in it? And the leader wasn't really sure. He said, I'm not sure, probably not. And so the boy took the cookie, ate the cookie, had a horrible reaction, not right away, but yeah. later when he got home, and he yeah. actually passed away.
Yeah.
And oh my goodness, how
very
tragic.
Sad.
How tragic. So the whole article was just about how food allergies are at church. Mm-hmm. You know, schools have gotten very clear on their policies.
Yes.
Daycares have gotten very clear on their policies.
Yes.
Restaurants have gotten very clear on their policies. But it was talking about how church is still kind of this gray area where
yeah.
we're a little bit lagging behind in catching up with maybe the standards and the communication
yeah.
And so it was interesting. They said about 4% of Americans have food allergies, and up to 8% of children have a food allergy. It breaks it down in a yeah. ward of 200, that's about 8 people. In a primary of 40,
yeah.
it could, or a primary of 50, it could be up to 4 children.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes they're severe, uh-huh. and other times it's, you know,
it's milder.
Mild. So they just talked about how a big thing that would be nice is cutting down on trees at church. I am so for this, not because I have a child with an allergy, but because I have children that fight over treats. Like they'll get in the car with a big old candy bar, and they're like, "No fair, you're taking
She got a candy bar. I did it.
I want a treat when I get home because she got a candy bar." So anyway,
the fairness debate. Oh, that's a whole nother mom issue.
Oh, there could be so much benefit to cutting True. Down at treats at church. But it just mentions, like, why do we always have
yeah.
to have so much food at church? And it's really gotten extreme over
yeah.
the years. What used to be a bag of Cheerios has now turned into a full-blown
meal
peanut
in
butter
sacrament
sandwiches,
meeting.
Being eating in sacrament, which, by the way, I have witnessed.
Oh my God.
A peanut butter sandwich eaten in, like, full, not even cut, by a child. Older. I mean,
yeah.
not a teen.
Yeah.
Primary
yeah.
child, not a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well,
so.
and you know what? And I have a child that has food allergies.
Yeah.
My youngest daughter, Katie, is allergic to peanuts and all tree nuts, which is kind of an unusual combination mm-hmm. because they come genetically from different families. And so, and you know, I have found that allergy parents kind of come in two varieties. There's not a lot of middle ground when it comes to allergy parents. Either they are like to the extreme of, I'm not coming in your home till every surface has been wiped down because you don't have a nut-free home. Or you're a lot like me, who is like, you got to live in a nut-free world. Figure it out.
Right. You're not going to be able to have the same thing they have.
Exactly.
You have to have something different, and that's part of life.
Exactly. So. And that's how I've chosen to be with mm-hmm. Katie, is we don't have a nut-free home because she needs to understand those things. But it runs this risk, just like
right.
what you talked about. And the thing with food allergies is you can have a mild reaction one time, and you can have a reaction that sends you into anaphylactic shock the next time. There's no rhyme or reason mm-hmm. to it. And so Katie actually, a very similar thing happened to her. She was in primary class. Her teacher did not know she had a food allergy because I'm not one to go to all the primary teachers and say my kid has a food allergy. That's not me. And Katie is usually very, very good about asking, you know, does it have nuts? Mm-hmm. And so I can't remember what it was her teacher made, but it had nuts. And Katie ended up with a reaction. And as soon as she puts something in her mouth, she almost immediately knows if it has nuts in it because of what happens in her mouth. And the teacher felt awful. The teacher felt so, so bad because she didn't know. And it wasn't anything that was obvious to Katie. But certainly it could have had the impact of a far worse situation like that right. family. So,
oh, I think it happens all the time.
Yeah.
When I was primary president, I poisoned a child with soy. It was an accident. I had made these cookies that had peanut butter because I knew nobody had a peanut allergy.
Uh-huh.
And she said, does it have soy? And I was like, no, I don't think so. It just has peanut butter. And she was fine. It wasn't serious, but
so you were like the leader who handed the 14-year-old the kit. Yeah, I don't think
that
was peanuts.
That was me. I think she got hives or something. Her mom contacted me later that night and said, "Can you look at the ingredients on your peanut butter jar?" Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So yeah, everybody needs to kind of be aware.
Exactly.
I felt horrible. I shouldn't have risked it.
Yeah.
I should have said, "I'm not sure. Don't eat it." That's
yeah,
what I should
exactly.
have said.
Exactly. Well, and you know, and the most important thing that this article talked about that I really liked mm-hmm. is it talked about people need to work together.
Right.
You know, because a lot of times parents will, you know, say to the leaders, "Well, my kid has this allergy, so you just better figure it out." And they expect the leaders to do all of the accommodating for the kids.
Right.
There are other times where the parents want to be like so heavily involved and tell the leaders, you can't have this, you can't do that,
right.
and make all of these rules. And so I like the idea of people working together. And that's one of the things that the article talks about mm-hmm. is if you have a child with a food allergy, you know, work with the leaders in your ward to say, you know, how can we, you know, make sure that this is a good experience, not only for my kid, but for every other kid in there.
Right, right. Bridge the gap.
Bridge the gap. I think, you know, and that's just wise advice regardless.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And, yeah, I mean, they even hit on sacrament with so many celiac people.
Yeah.
Sacrament is a big issue, not just for kids, but a lot of adults. And you really have to keep that bread separate.
So does your
different wards handle it differently?
What does your ward do with regards to, like, gluten, people that need gluten-free?
You know, I don't think the ward we're in right now. Actually, I do know one gluten-free, and I don't know what they do for him. But I know our ward in Portland, mm-hmm. we had two people that had celiac, and they had their own separate sacrament tray. Mm. And they would put a paper towel down underneath mm-hmm. it, and they would bring their own bread, mm-hmm. and it would get blessed. But they had their own tray, and the two families always sat, like, close together
okay.
so that one person could bring them their tray. And there were never any issues. It seemed to work out.
Yeah.
So.
Well, in my ward right now, uh-huh. I you know, we probably have five or six people that are gluten-free, uh-huh. that have to do gluten-free.
Right.
And they are scattered all over the chapel. So what uh-huh. they do, which I think is really cool, is they have this small little kind of square plastic cup. Uh-huh. And they have them on most of the sacrament trays.
Okay.
And so in each of that cup, they will have a gluten-free bread. And I think the teachers are the ones that are responsible, like they bring regular bread for making sure there's a gluten-free
right.
option. And so as they pass the trays around, if you want a gluten-free piece of bread,
you take
it out of a little cup. If you want a regular piece of bread, you take it off the tray.
Which works.
Exactly.
If there's no contamination, I think that if you have celiac disease, you can't even, like, they would have to wear gloves or something.
Like
I don't know. They couldn't break the bread. I don't know.
Well, like I said, we don't have anybody mm-hmm. with celiac disease that I'm aware of. We just
right.
have a number of people that have gluten intolerance
right.
and
right.
they can't yeah. have gluten. So.
So anyway, very interesting article.
And again, another hot button mom topic,
yes,
food allergies.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Let's move on to our biggie, Mother's Day.
We've been waiting for this.
Oh, we have been waiting for this for a month.
Okay. This is the Deseret Book Catalog that came, I believe, in April.
Yes. I think, did it come before conference or right after conference? I know they
always... I think it was after conference.
Okay. Yeah. Because
so,
it seems like you always get one before conference.
Right.
And then, of course, they do a Mother's Day one.
Okay. So when you're listening to the podcast, you won't be able to see it, but we'll describe it to you.
Yes, we will do our best to describe it. If you're on Facebook, you can watch the video on Facebook and you can see what we are talking about.
So the Deseret book catalog, I mean, we could talk for hours on Deseret book. It's such a love-hate for me. I'm like, oh, I get the catalog and I cringe because of like all the weird things and the people making so much money off of spiritual things that are supposed to be spiritual. But I mean,
but at the same time, they do have some really good products that add to your spirituality.
Right. And why shouldn't they be able to make money if they came up with a good study guide for the Book of Mormon?
Exactly.
I don't know.
Exactly.
I have such mixed feelings. Like, it really...
Okay.
It really fires me up to go through the Deseret book catalog on a normal day, but this one,
one sent you over the cliff.
Yes. This sent me over the cliff. My husband showed me. He's like, you're going to love it.
Oh, he knew before you even.
Oh, yeah. He's like, check this out.
Ooh, okay.
So this is like their Mother's Day edition.
Yes.
So certain women are, and that was the talk. Who gave the talk?
Oh.
Called Certain Women.
Oh. It was. She has a book in here.
Oh, it was Linda Burton.
Yes, Linda Burton.
Linda Burton. That was the name of one of her conference talks.
Yes, one of her conference talks.
Certain women. And it was a lovely talk.
Yes.
It was a great talk.
We have no issues with Sister Burton's talk.
Wonderful talk.
We're fine with Sister Burton's talk.
We're not fine
with what Deseret Book did to Sister Burton's talk.
Has taken this talk and turned it into a marketing
bonanza for Mother's Day.
Monster.
Yes.
So
monster. A marketing monster. That's a good way to describe it.
Certain women are. So they carry this theme through the whole catalog.
Yes.
While they're hawking their stuff.
Yes.
Certain women are dedicated to the Lord. And then there's a picture of Sister Burton's book.
Yes.
I'm just going to read you a few of my favorite pages.
Yes.
We can't do the whole thing. There's so much good stuff. So the next one that I thought was great is this one. Certain women cultivate joy and peace at home. And this is on the page where they have all of the
sayings you can put on your wall.
Sayings you can put on your wall and the little willow tree figurines. So, you know, cultivate love in your home.
Does cultivate love in your home mean yelling at your kids to stop arguing?
To not break the little willow tree thing
exactly.
As they're tossing it around?
Or in my case, shooting it with the airsoft bullet.
Right. This is why we don't have willow tree things in my house.
Oh, gosh.
So, all right. Certain women appreciate the beauty around them. And this is the page that has all of the Jesus pictures. And
because you better have a Jesus picture in your home.
I have like serious, serious Jesus picture issues. We could do like a whole podcast on this because I really, really have a hard time. Like my husband wanted to pick one out several years ago. And it took us years to find one that was acceptable to me because I can't handle it when he looks like a romance novel cover. Or like too romantic or too greasy. I don't know. It's just, I have a tough time finding ones that I like. So
fair enough.
Let's see. What was another? This one. Oh, this one was funny. Certain women hold their families close. And this is on a page that has pictures of all the jewelry that you can customize that says mom and like the little, you know, silver jewelry.
Yes.
That has family trees and moms and things like that. There's some cute jewelry.
There is some cute jewelry. I have no issue with the jewelry.
Okay, this one. Certain women make time for gospel study.
Oh.
And this is on the page that has like all of the
study Book guides.
Of study guides. Yeah, here we are. And, you know,
churchy
books.
Churchy.
Yeah. Okay, and this is my favorite. This is on the back cover.
Okay. Yes.
This one is the best. Okay, can you see it? Certain women serve their ancestors. And guess what it's showing? It's right next to...
It's hawking temple bags.
Because you need a temple bag to serve your ancestors.
Not only do you need a temple bag, you need a $70 temple bag.
Yeah, they're expensive.
I know. So she showed you the back cover. I'm going to show you the inside cover there with their bags. So this one right here, the top one, this one. It's kind of a lavender color in case you can't tell. It is a $70 temple bag, okay? This one, let's see, this one is a $70 temple bag, and that one's $70, and the rest are run between $40 and $70. So, now, I have not inspected these bags in person, but I have seen these bags at the temple, and I will tell you what I think of these bags when I sit at the temple. Oh, yeah, they're selling. I'm going to see them at the temple. So I don't know what you use for your temple bag. I just have this big crossbody messenger bag that I think I bought at the Gap clearance or the Gap outlet, you know, for maybe like 10 bucks. You know, I can fit everything in it very easily, you know, wear it on my shoulder, cross my body, however I want. So these bags, these temple bags that are in the Deseret Book ad, they look like a purse. They look very lovely. I'm always in favor of a good purse. However, when you have all your temple stuff, when you have your packet, your dress, your shoes, mm-hmm. your slip, what I have noticed in the women that carries these bags is like they are struggling to get the zipper up. Like
they're too tiny.
These bags are bursting at the seams. And a good handbag should never look like it's bursting at the seams. A good handbag should look like there's, you know, space in it. So you've got your $70 beautiful bag that looks ridiculous because you can't stuff all your stuff in it and close it.
That's
so
a problem.
It's a problem.
They're cute though. I'd use them for like a regular purse.
Oh yeah,
I'd use them for a regular purse. Maybe you should just buy it for a purse.
Exactly. You know, if you are in need of a big mom purse because you have a newborn or small children and you have to carry stuff around, that might be a very good option for you. But like I said, I haven't been impressed with them as temple bags, and you know, the whole loveliness of the Deseret Book ad to, you know, make me feel so wonderful. You know that certain women are all of these things. Maybe only one or two of me. Again, I know it's a comparison thing and we shouldn't be comparing ourselves, but...
But come on, Deseret. Yeah. Back. Quit trying to use cheap marketing methods.
Exactly. And that's in comparison. I got the Siegel Book ad, and the Siegel Book ad did not elect to take a theme. It did show many women-related products in it, and it had some of the same books and stuff.
But they didn't mom guilt you into buying
them?
They
did not mom guilt me into buying them so that I could be a certain woman. So anyway, so I appreciate the Siegel Book Mother's Day ad much more than I appreciated Deseret Book. So
good to know.
There you go.
Good to know.
All right.
We've got to wrap it up pretty soon.
We do. We have to wrap it up pretty soon. But just to hit on Mother's Day, I have to tell you what happened tonight.
Okay.
So, you know, we talked last year in our podcast, sacrament meeting, Mother's Day sacrament meeting can be a potpourri of everything and is likely to induce all sorts of mom guilt.
Kind of a landmine.
It's a landmine. And I really do feel sorry for the bishopric member whoever has to plan it because it is such a landmine. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so tonight my son gets a call from the first counselor in the bishopric. And my son always puts his phone on speakerphone. I'm not sure why he's not capable of holding it to his ear, but he puts it on speakerphone. So he's in the office where I'm in there, and the first counselor calls him and he says, you know, Mark, we want you to, he's the 14-year-old, we want you to give a talk in sacrament meeting on Mother's Day. Would you be willing to do that? And Mark says yes. And so the bishopric member says, okay, we're going to have 12 youth, and each of you are going to have 2 minutes, no more, no less. We want you to come up to the pulpit. We're going to call you all the Army of Helaman. And he said, no notes. You can't bring any notes up there. I know.
What?
I know. He says, you have to have a story in your head. And he says, I want you to describe what your mom has done to teach you and be faithful like the Army of Helaman.
Oh.
And then you can tell your mom how much you love her and bear your testimony and sit down. So I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, oh, okay.
Does he know who he's dealing with?
I don't know. Now,
because Mark will have no problem talking for 2 minutes.
No.
But you never know what's going to come out of that boy's mouth.
Mark has zero filter. None. Zero. I don't know. I don't know. I could be sitting in the back completely mortified by the time Mother's Day is over.
So you're going to be pretty stressed out on Mother's Day.
Oh, I am going to be so stressed out on Mother's Day because I have no clue what my 14-year-old is going to say, because it could range from a nice story to the most embarrassing thing he can think of.
Oh,
and you
goodness.
Never know what's going to come out of his mouth. So this should be highly entertaining.
I want to come to your sacrament meeting. Yeah,
you probably should, because let me tell you, you honestly just never know with Mark.
Oh. So are they having no adult speakers?
I don't think so, because they're having...
putting it all in the youth this
year. Well, they're having 12 youth speakers. So you figure if they're 2 minutes apiece, that's 24 minutes. Yeah. Plus the primary's got to get up and sing.
Oh, right.
Primary's always got to sing a couple songs.
About the primary.
So...
oh, this is going to be exciting.
I will return and report.
Yes, we want to hear.
Okay. All right. Well, we better wrap it up with our favorite things.
Okay. Shall I go first?
Why don't you go first?
Okay. I brought it since we're on Facebook Live so you can see it.
I brought mine too.
This is so random, but it is a vegetable tray. This is just my favorite thing this week. By Rubbermaid. It's super cheap. It's like the flimsy plastic, like, you know, kind of the disposable stuff. The reason this is my favorite thing, last summer, my food bloggers who I love, our Best Bites, she had put on her Instagram that she bought these. They're a good size for your fridge, and she fills them with like veggies, and she fills one with fruits, and she pulls them out when her kids want snacks. And I was like,
oh, that's a really good idea.
Yeah, I was like, I'm going to try that. So I ordered it on Amazon. It's cheap. It's like less than $10, and it has a lid. And so it has all these compartments, and it's...
Oh, I want that.
It fits in your dishwasher because it's small enough. Yeah. It doesn't take up all the room in your fridge. So, of course, when I first envisioned this, I thought, this is going to get my kids to eat vegetables. I'm going to put out these beautiful fruit and vegetable trays, and they'll eat vegetables. I'm here to tell you that is not how it went.
Okay.
But I still love this. It is still my favorite thing, because the reason is it has not made my kids love or, like, go to choose vegetables. Yes. But this makes me enforcing them eating vegetables much easier.
Really?
So basically, I love it because it helps me force my children to eat vegetables, and it helps me force myself to eat vegetables. So if I just kind of have it full, like if there's a night where we have a dinner and it's like pizza and I'm too lazy to make a salad, or actually I only have one out of my three girls that will even eat a salad, I pull out the vegetable tray and I say, pick five if you would like dessert. Or pick three or pick eight. Oh,
that's good.
And I can use it like I hold dessert over their heads and they get to choose what, but they don't get dessert till they pick whatever number I say.
So, and eat it.
Anyway.
Okay.
That's your mom hack for the week.
All
since
right.
This is our Mother's Day episode.
Okay. I am going to do a gift giving idea for the men. I've got two things, but I'm going to do a gift giving idea for the men. And again, I'm going to try and describe this. If you're with us on Facebook, you can see it. So do you see this lovely box here? Let's see if I can hold it up. Okay. So the box, you can see it has zippers and it unzips. Oh, I'm going the wrong way. Okay.
It's rose gold.
It's rose gold, very in color. And so I bought this at Ulta for $19.99. So not only do you get the box, but you get all of the makeup in the box. And let me just show you what it comes with. So it comes with this little blush. It comes with a bronzer. It comes with a lip pencil that has two colors, kind of a nude and kind of a kind of berry color. It comes with an eyeliner, both brown and black. It comes with this primer, which is wonderful. This alone is just like $15 if you buy this. It comes with a little eyelid or eyeshadow primer. It comes with four of these little babies that are the lip gloss. So two of them are lip gloss and two of them are colored lipsticks. Mm-hmm. And then it comes with this beautiful palette of eyeshadow.
And the colors are really good. You probably can't see it very well.
There, that kind of helps a little bit. Yeah, the colors are really, really good. Okay. So, you know, men, if you are out there, and again, not all women love makeup, but if you are married to a woman who loves makeup, oh, and you get these brushes too. It came with the brushes. So if you are married to a woman that loves makeup, this is a $20 Mother's Day gift available at Ulta. I loved every color in it. I'm using the stuff. So I kind of gifted it to myself.
I hope my husband's still watching because I want that. Okay. And he will go into Ulta. He's a man.
Dang.
He'll go in. Like, I have to tell him very specifically.
What you want.
What I want. But he's known to go in for Christmas presents.
Sweet.
He'll walk right in, usually with a handout, and say, can I have this?
And then last of all, but not least, because I'm going to share something that is not mom related. Uh-huh. This is the party pack of Mentos. Okay. And in this party pack of Mentos, you open it up And it comes with 125 individually wrapped Mentos.
Nice.
Now.
They stay fresh.
They stay fresh. Let me tell you where I use my party pack of Mentos. Church, folks. I have 9 a.m. church, and I am not a morning person. So in order for me to stay awake during sacrament meeting, I suck on the Mentos. Kind of like I keep Mentos in my pocket at the temple as well.
I keep small candies in my pocket at the temple too, but you can't do these at the temple individually wrapped.
I know. You'd have to like
to
unwrap
very,
them.
Very, very sneaky.
Yeah. You'd have to unwrap them and put them in your pocket. But the other thing that I like about these two, especially the mint ones, because you can also get the fruit ones. The other thing I like about these individually wrapped Mentos is like after dinner, I'm always craving like a little piece of sugar after dinner. Mm-hmm. And I can put one of these in my mouth. It has very few calories.
They're full size.
It will satisfy that sweet that I want. But yet, I haven't consumed a cookie, candy, you know, a big piece of candy, etc. So I keep them in my car, my purse, you know, wherever. And you get minty fresh breath.
Okay, where'd you find them at? Walmart?
So Walmart has these. I found them at Winco. That's kind of an Idaho store. Mm-hmm. They're generally about $5 for 125. And the fruit ones, you can eat the fruit ones pretty fast. It takes me a while to work through the mint ones because the mint is really strong.
They're strong.
This isn't something you pop in your mouth and you're like, geez, I want to have another one right away. So anyway, that's my thing that I love and one of my favorite things.
I like it.
All right. So I think that concludes us tonight. And
you're still with us. Sorry, that was a long one.
I know. We did a long one tonight. Jeff and Ella, or Jeff's not going to be happy when he has to like put this up on the pod or in the podcast format. But we had a lot to say with Mother and Mother's Day and next time we see you, Ariane, you will have subdivided, so to speak. So, happy pushy.
Thank you. Okay. Wish me luck.
I will wish you luck, and I'm very anxious to meet my new nephew. So.
Yes, it'll be good. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Okay, thanks, Twim Nation. Have a good evening. This week in Mormons.com.